Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday, ready to talk about these weekend's cards, including UFC 268 coming to you from New York City, New York, and Bellator 270 that took place on the other side of the pond out in Dublin, Ireland. So let's get to the big stuff, the stuff everyone's talking about. No disrespect to Bellator. They did have a title fight. We are going to cover it. Also, news nuggets headed your way, the fallouts, everything. This is a poor intro. Sorry, I'm rusty. I'm coming off a nice weekend with the troops. We may even mention a little bit about that experience as well. So buckle up, and then we'll get started with some UFC 268 recap. Sorry for the sloppy intro there, Goes. I'm so excited to talk about this huge card that I just wanted to get going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of fights on that card alone that we could probably do an entire show on.
I'm scared that we may spend the whole hour on just the three top fights of the night. Gaethje Chandler, Namajunas Zhang, and Usman Covington. But we'll make sure we get to give some love and spread it around because by all accounts, it was a great card in New York. And then again, we got to touch on Bellator. It's a fantastic promotion. They had a title fight, a couple of their key fighters fighting as well. And, of course, the social media stuff that goes on, the trash talk, the bad blood, the good stuff, you know, we'll get to all of it. So here we go. Let's start off right at the top, man. Kamaru Usman defended his belt against Colby Covington. He got unanimous scores across the board, 248-47s. And 249-46s. This is something I want to say, though. When you see 48, or when you hear 48-47, first thing you think of is, oh, wow, round five must have decided it. That's what I thought, guys. I thought it was 2-2 going into round five because I thought Usman had won the first two rounds and Covington had come back and won the rounds three and four. It's the exact opposite of what happened the first time they fought. If you all remember, Covington won the first two rounds and then Usman came storming back to win rounds three and four before actually finishing Covington in round five. But that was not the case. I looked at the judges' scorecards, and here's how it went down. I'll do it like this. In round one, all the judges gave it to Usman, 10-9. In round two, all the judges gave it to Usman, 10-9. I think we're all good there. I don't think anyone has any disputes. Round three, one judge did agree with me and Goes, because those are Goes' feelings too, that Sal D'Amato, that Covington won that round, 10-9. However, two judges, Dave Torelli and Derek Cleary, both veteran judges, they gave Usman the round. So Usman was up 30-27 going into rounds four and five. What does that mean? I'll tell you. It means Covington needed a finish, and here's why. Because even if Covington wins the two rounds, he loses 3-2. Which is what he did on their cards, actually. But, not on their cards, but on two other judges' scorecards. I'll explain in a second. But even if Covington wins one of those rounds 10-8, it's still 47-47. And guess who walks home with the title? Kamaru Usman. That's what happened with Wonderboy and Tyron Woodley. It's not an actual title defense. He retains the title, but still. That's the important thing, right, is going home the champ, I think. I mean, as much as I love a title defense and saying you beat someone, I still think going home with the title way by far trumps anything. Well, at least that, you know, the trumps obviously the losing part. So in rounds three, two judges gave it to Usman. D'Amato gave it to Covington. Round four, D'Amato gives it to Covington again. So he has it 2-2 going into the fifth. And then Usman, then the other two judges also agreed. Oh, I'm fucking this up. Hold on a second. Round three, two judges gave it to Usman. They were the ones that had it 30-27. That's Torelli and Cleary. D'Amato goes 10-9 Covington. Then in round four, D'Amato goes 10-9 Covington. He has it 2-2 going into the fifth. Perfect. Torelli has it 3-1 going into the fifth because he gave Covington round four. So did Derek Cleary. So, again, that's why those two cards matter at that point. Now, here's what happened in round five. D'Amato gave that round to Usman. And see, I thought Covington – I agree with him. We agree with him. Usman won that round. I knew it was close. I had a feeling that it was going to go Usman's way, but I was telling the guys this could go either way. You never know. But I thought Usman probably had done enough to retain the title. So D'Amato goes 10-9 to Usman. So his card is identical to how I had mine. And then Dave Torelli goes 10-9 Covington. Derek Cleary goes 10-9 Usman. So on the two judges that had it 30-27 going into the fourth and fifth, where it didn't matter what Colby did, one of them even went so far as to say, I got Usman winning four rounds. He's the 49-46 guy. The other two are the 48-47 guys. So kind of bizarre a little bit how they came to their decisions. It's three men that are well-trained and have been doing this for a long time. And I'll be honest with you, I'm sitting there with some MMA fighters and I'm watching the fights, and even us, we can't come to a definite decision when you go, what do you think? You know, I think they're going to give it to Chan. I think they're going to give it to Gaethje. I thought Rose got it. I thought Zhang got it. Like, we're all over the place. And it's funny because everyone has a meltdown on Twitter, you know, if you disagree with them. But in reality, is we can't even agree amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess what I wanted to talk about a little bit was the strategies in this fight. Some of it made sense and some of it confused me. I thought what Colby did in the first fight, just the volume coming at Usman, I thought that bothered him a little bit. And I thought he would do more of that. In the first fight, he didn't shoot one time. In this fight, he did shoot. He did try and wrestle. Going into that fight, as George mentioned, we were on a military base with some fighters. And that was one thing that a lot of us had pointed out, that he needs to try and wrestle Usman in this one, at least a little bit. He did, and it didn't really work out for him. So you could say, all right, that's an adjustment. But he came out kind of slow. And it was a little bit of a reverse of what I thought, how I thought the fight was going to play out. I thought actually Colby might win a couple of the early rounds, and then I thought Usman would turn it on. It was sort of the opposite. The thing that stood out for me on Usman's side, who, by the way, will probably go down. I mean, he's getting closer and closer to GSP with every fight.
Yeah.
He confused me a little bit as well, because his fighter IQ, there were times where he was just getting in a firefight for no reason. And Colby was landing good shots that I think really hurt Usman a couple times. And rather than kind of learn your lesson, he kept going to it. It was very strange. Maybe he was overconfident. I don't know what. But I did have Usman winning the first two and the last round, and Colby winning four and five, with five being somewhat close. But when it was done, I felt pretty confident Usman was your winner.
As did I. And so I guess the only reason I was like, well, you never know, you know, playing that guy, was because I didn't think Rose had won the fight before, which puts that little doubt. Every fight puts a little doubt into you if the judges don't agree with you, because you have your criteria. You know the judges have a certain way of looking at things. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe, you know, who knows? It's 5 minutes. We can't possibly remember everything that's going on, especially if you've had a few drinks. But you just kind of have this overall feeling of who you'd rather be when you're standing there holding that monster drink. One shirt sleeve is in, the other one's hanging off your neck. You're all fucked up in the face. Bruce Buffer's looking at the card, and the ref is standing there holding, you know, each of their hands. You kind of have a feeling which way they're leaning, especially if you're a gambler. You know, you're like, man, my goose is cooked. I need a miracle. You may be saying a quiet prayer, sign of the cross your fingers. And, you know, so if you had Usman, you're kind of going, I got this. I just can't talk shit because I'm going to look stupid if they say Covington. But if you're Covington, you're quietly saying, oh, God, I'm fucked. God damn it, I got to go to the bank on Monday and meet the bookie, you know, whatever. You're already playing it out, right? And so, yeah, I had that feeling, goes like you. Usman's going to get his name called, and he did, and I think he deserved it. But Covington showed improvement, and that's why Usman was a big favorite going into this fight, because, again, they were 2-2 going into round five, and Usman finished him. But Usman was a minus up to 320, I think I was seeing across the board. Of course, we're always talking about typical odds, but they move around, you know, 290 to 320 mark. Covington coming back anywhere from like 220 to 250, depending on what you got, wherever you got it, wherever it's legal. And I thought, man, that can't be. Now, you said Covington, you talked about the first fight. I think goes he slowed things down because, well, to be fair, that strategy didn't work. Well, it worked to get him those first two rounds, but he also tired. And Colby's considered a cardio machine. And Usman proved I can go far like you did. Usman used to get accused that he couldn't go into the later rounds as strong as the other guys, and he proved that he could. Usman also develops a lot of power. I think that's why Usman was more content with boxing and not maybe working for takedowns. I think he thought, well, Covington's got some hands, but he ain't got knockout hands like I do, like what I just did to Masvidal. So let's just try standing and see how that works out. The problem is, even though Covington doesn't have the one-punch power that Usman does, he improved his hands and his boxing. He was slipping some power punches that were coming from Usman, and he was hitting them back, and he was landing them. And when he was landing them, he was touching his chin a couple times. I think Usman got buzzed. Not hard. Legs weren't wobbly. You know, he wasn't spun around or anything like that. But he definitely didn't have his full legs under him. And maybe that's where Covington, if he had put a little bit more pressure, maybe he catches him, maybe not. But Usman was still cognizant enough to throw back, get his respect back, get his ground back. And that's what made it such a compelling fight, such an interesting fight, that strategy going back and forth. But again, I'm just baffled that it wasn't 2-2 according to two judges' scorecards. So again, Covington really needed the finish, because even if he wins round five, on the other two judges that didn't give it to him, it wouldn't have mattered. Even if he got the 10-8, it wouldn't have mattered, because he would have had a majority draw, two 47s, 47s, and that's not enough to walk away with the title. It's only enough for you to say, I once fought the champ, and he didn't beat me, and I didn't beat him, which is what Stephen Thompson could say in one of his fights versus Tyrone Woodley. What good does that do you? You know what I mean? It does you nothing. Now, Moreno drew with Davis and Figueiredo, but that was because of a point deduction. So, but guess who went home with the title? Figueiredo. Guess who gets the pay-per-view points? Figueiredo. Guess who's wearing the shiny gold and all that? Figueiredo, you know. It wasn't until Moreno came in and smoked him that everything changed. And you see the life Moreno leads now, and now Figueiredo's the chaser. It's super important to actually walk home with the title, not just fight to a draw. That's when I wish, selfishly, that we did have live scoring, that you could see it. But, of course, I know that in the end it wouldn't be the right thing. But if they looked up and they go, holy crap, you're drawing dead. I wonder if Covington just unloads every ounce he has of strength, every drop in the gas tank, rather than, you know, kind of look for that opening, look for that opening. 4 minutes left. I'm looking for the opening. 3 minutes left. Maybe I should wrestle. Maybe an opening. 2 minutes left. And then you get to the very end and you just didn't maybe find the opening. You couldn't capitalize. Who knows?
But, you know, a lot of people look at it, that situation, that way. And I'm not going to lie, there are a lot of fighters that probably would do that. But there are also a lot of fighters that would go, man, I ain't knocking this guy out. I'm tired as hell. There ain't no way I can win this fight. I'm just going to cruise and get the hell out of here and not get knocked out. I'm not going to sit here and fight for a fight that I don't think I'm going to win. There are some fighters that think that way, and they would do that as well. Open scoring, I know there are some people that love it. I'm telling you, there are always going to be holes, and there will always be nightmare scenarios. You're better off just keeping it the way it is, and just, we just need better judging. And even then, as bad as it can be, it's not as bad as people think.
I don't think it would be as bad as what you said, because think about it, Goes. If you look up and you know the score and you don't try because you know you don't have enough to take them out, man, that's going to be exposed. The promotion is going to recognize that, and I think there'll be a lot of fighters that would get possibly cut, or they just wouldn't be if they didn't try. What I was more scared, and what I thought you were going to say, is in the case of Usman, him going, wait, I'm up, he can't beat me unless he takes me out, I know what I'll do, I'll just tie him up against the cage, just throw those knees, those elbows, lay on the ground, close guard, lock him up, you know, or just be on top and ride him, not try and advance my decision and my position and just, you know, get the hell out of here that way. That I could see, which really is comparable to a basketball team that works the clock, you know, and they're up by 20 in the fourth quarter and they're just trying not to turn it over, you know what I mean? Or even better, that football team that works the 40-second clock all the way to the end and just runs it, and you know, but that's a strategy. You can't hate on it in basketball, or you can't like it in football and basketball when it works for you, and then hate it in MMA when the fighter you like is losing. So who knows, man? I don't know. Now, there's also something to standing up, clapping for both fighters, you know, discussing it with your homies. Who do you think won? Who do you think won? You know, and going on Twitter, giving your opinion, reading other opinions, and then those 3 minutes that go by, and then all of a sudden Bruce Buffer gives that announcement. That's kind of compelling, too. There's something to be said for that, waiting for the actual announcement, the gasping, you know, the air that gets sucked out of the losing team, and, of course, the joy that comes with having your name announced. There's something special about that, too.
How about the judges hearing booing towards the score? You know, if you're the one guy that went the other way and you hear everybody boo, the first thing you think is, man, I fucked that round up. Two guys that have the same training as me thought differently. I got to make this up. I mean, we're only human. But there's just too much, man. There's too much to worry about with open scoring.
That is correct. And if we're going to use basketball and football as comparisons, guess what would probably happen is those makeup calls. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where you feel like you look up and see, okay, I didn't get that one right. I'm going to slightly make one up. And usually in a stadium, a lot of people see it, recognize it, and you just feel like, all right, you know, it kind of balanced out, because it usually will balance out in your favor too. But anyway, folks, that was it. Usman won. He has now defended his title 5 times. 5 of those title defenses have come against 2 guys. 2 of them have been against Jorge Masvidal. 2 against Covington. 1 time each he went to a decision. 1 time each he finished him. The other one was Gilbert Burns. He now has 5 title defenses to GSP's 9. Dana White says he's the greatest welterweight ever. I'm not there yet. He's 20-1 overall, so he has 1 loss compared to GSP, who had 2 losses. He didn't avenge the loss because it happened before the UFC, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know that he cares, because he's beaten better fighters than that. I think his name is Jose Caceres. GSP did avenge him because both guys remained in the UFC. In fact, one of them was for a title, so that's why he rematched it. It was Matt Serra. And then Matt Hughes was a longtime champion and contender. And so, of course, they were going to, at some point, be on a collision course. You know, these were the early days of the UFC where there just wasn't as many athletes. So oftentimes he fought a lot of guys on repeat. So that said, you know, he avenged both losses. He also won another title in another weight class. However, that makes him a middleweight. It doesn't make him a successful welterweight that he did that. So I don't know that you, if you're talking about who's the greatest welterweight, I think what we're judging is everything that happened at 170. If you're talking about who's the greater fighter, then you can pull, GSP people can pull that card. Well, my guy went up to a different weight class and won the fight. That I get. You can't do that in a greatest welterweight argument, in my opinion. So 9 title defenses versus 5. The other guy's only got 1 loss. That's Usman. GSP had 2. GSP avenged both. Usman didn't avenge his. You know, now we're splitting hairs. I just think 9 versus 5 makes a difference. I'll give credit to Usman that maybe nowadays the opposition's maybe tougher, of course. You know, that's going to happen in all sports. But I remember GSP's list of killers, man. Koscheck, Fitch, Sarah, Hughes, Shields. I mean, you know, Hendricks. I mean, fuck, come on. Like, seriously, he fought monsters, you know. And there wasn't too many on repeat. You know, I still think he had, you know, 9 means something, man. 9, I don't have to get to Usman having 9 and GSP having 9 for me to make the switch, in my opinion. And by the way, and I'm going to say this a lot this week because I have a feeling we're going to talk about this a lot. This has nothing to do with Usman, guys. Because let me tell you something. If Usman gets the 10 and beats GSP, or even if he gets to eight and I think he's better than GSP, I'm going to say it when I think I feel it. And guess what? There's going to be another killer that comes along in this sport, probably in our lifetimes, and he's going to be incredible. He might be 25-0 with four title defenses, and everyone's going to be singing that guy's praises saying, he's the greatest ever. And guess what? I'm going to defend Usman the way I defend GSP now versus Usman. I will defend Usman versus that new cat so that new cat does everything he needed to do to actually surpass Usman.
Mm-hmm. You got to look at some of those names on GSP's list. A lot of them are going into the Hall of Fame. Okay. And you look at some of the guys on Usman's list, they're good fighters, but I don't know eventually that they're going to be recognized that way. Like, I think it's somewhat early to have this argument. Like, as time plays out, things are going to move, they're going to shift, and there'll be other arguments. But if you're going to ask me today what I think, I don't think Usman's there. But I will say, I think he's going to be there. I think he's going to continue to do this. But right now, I there's not enough.
I agree. I'd like to see him get past Edwards, if Edwards can get there, because Edwards has a difficult matchup versus Jorge Masvidal. I'd like to see – or Luque. Luque didn't make weight, by the way. He was a substitute fighter. He didn't make weight. He's another guy that's contending. So probably one of those two is someone who he'll have to fight. Maybe Thompson can get his way back up there, but he's running out of time. Shamayev, of course, is definitely a hot ticket. Everyone's talking about him. So I've thrown out four names. You know, Covington and Masvidal are going to have it difficult to get back because that would be the third time. You know how difficult it is to get that third shot. Gilbert Burns has only been beaten once by Kamaru Usman, so I could see him maybe working his way back. He actually gave an L. I'd like to see him beat two of those five, get to seven, and then I think we're really ready to put on a lab coat, get the microscope, and really do some scientific examination of these records, of the opposition's records, you know, and really give a more educated. I still think we need two more title defenses from Kamaru Usman. He's looked great, but he's also lost rounds. I don't think GSP really lost too many rounds. And he lost rounds, but, you know, not as many, it seems like. So it's close, man. He's gaining on him. He's gaining on him. I don't think he needs to get to nine, you know, or even break the nine. Because I recognize the greatness that is Kamaru Usman. And again, you know, one loss less is something that's something special. So we're going to take that into consideration. But he's not there yet, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
All right, ready to move on. Let's get to Rose Namajunas versus Zhang Weili. Rose Namajunas came into the fight as an underdog on some houses. She was anywhere from plus 100, plus 105, to actually minus 110, minus 115. And, you know, Zhang Weili was usually just kind of the favorite wherever you caught her. I don't really think I saw a plus number next to her. She was anywhere from like minus 105, 110 to minus 130. And I was shocked, Ghost, because I thought, what? Come on. You know, she hasn't been indestructible. Joanna gave her one hell of a fight. Rose finished her, for crying out loud. Why is Zhang Weili this favorite? Just because she went to fight ready to get ready with Cejudo? I mean, I love the new look, the new location. That team's hot. They just won another title. We'll talk about that in a sec. But a finish is a finish, you know what I mean? And Rose is not a choker in big fights. And MSG, hell, aren't they calling it the Madison Rose Garden now or something like that?
Nice.
So I didn't get it. And then what happens? Zhang Weili starts winning the fight. I thought she won the first three rounds and Rose won the last two. I thought they were going to say her name, man. I couldn't believe it the way the fight was playing out. But the judges had it different than I did. Rose keeps her title. What did you think of this fight?
I think some of those rounds were close. I did have Rose winning 3-2. But I like what Zhang Weili did. I think she just kind of didn't make as many adjustments as Rose Namajunas did. And when Rose Namajunas, I think she should have beat on that leg a little bit more. There were a couple things I think she could have done. I know she's down 2-0 to the champ, but it's the type of fight that I wouldn't mind seeing again, just not right now, you know, but further down the line, maybe again, because Zhang Weili is super, super tough and you can tell she's still getting better. But I agreed with the judges' decision, but I do agree that some rounds were very close where we were kind of looking at each other like, was it Rose? Was it Zhang? They were close.
Yeah. So let me give you that scoring, by the way. I'll do it this way because I really fumbled it up last time. Zhang Weili won all three judges' scorecards in round one. Eric Cologne, Doug Crosby, and Michael Bell.
And we can all agree with that, right?
We can, yeah. And Rose won rounds 4 and 5 on all three judges' scorecards as well. So round one, Zhang Weili, rounds 4 and 5, Rose Namajunas. We can't argue. I thought she also won, so Zhang Weili won rounds 2 and 3. But I knew one of them was close, and I think it was round 2.
I think it was 2.
Yeah. So guess what? One judge had Zhang Weili winning round 2. That was Mike Bell. But two of them had Rose winning it. So on two judges' scorecards, after round 2, it was 1-1. That was Crosby and Cologne. On Michael Bell's card, he had Zhang Weili up 2-0, kind of what I had. In round 3, Cologne went with Rose, so now he has her up 2-1 going into round 4 and 5. Crosby gave it to Zhang Weili, again agreeing with me, because remember I had her winning 1, 2, and 3. And Michael Bell also gave her round 3. So Bell's given her a 30-27. He's got her up 3-0. He's got her up 3-0. Crosby's got her up 2-1. Zhang Weili, I'm talking about. And Cologne has her losing 2-1. So all three judges after 3 rounds have 3 different scores.
Mm-hmm.
How crazy is that, man? And then, of course, like I mentioned earlier, all three judges gave rounds 4 and 5 to Rose Namajunas. So what happened was the guy that had her up 2-1 going into rounds 4 and 5, he has her winning 4-1. The guy that had her had Rose losing 2-1 going into rounds 4 and 5 has her winning 3-2. Rose wins the fight at that point. And then the other one had Zhang Weili winning the first 3, Rose the last 2. He had Zhang Weili 3-2. So, yeah, man, that was the difference. I suppose if Doug Crosby gives Zhang Weili round 2, like Michael Bell and I did, Zhang Weili's the new champ. If Eric Cologne gives her round 2, it don't matter because he still has her winning 3-2. But it was a close fight overall. I guess this is what another thing I was thinking was, I didn't like the cornering as much as everyone else did. I thought not enough times did they get those last 5 seconds that a lot of great coaches give to their fighters. And that's, hey, listen to me. These judges' scorecards could be all over the place. Whether it's been that night or whether it's their feeling of giving an honest assessment to their fighter. So I still need you to look for that finish 90% of the time, 75% of the time. I mean, obviously it's important to win the round in a fight that could be 2-2. But if you're down, I just think you need to be looking for the finish. And I want to hear more judges or more coaches say that, because I would be pissed, because if I came in the next day or later that night, watched the fight or looked at the judges' scorecards and said, wait a minute, I was drawing dead. I was down 3-0 going into rounds 4 or 5. Why wasn't I told to not only step it up but to finish? Because Rose, remember, Rose in rounds 4 or 5 got Zhang Weili down, but she didn't really get some vicious ground and pound going. And She tried to pass her position, but Zhang Weili would get back her full guard or whatever. So if Rose knows she's down, then I think Rose may elect to get back up and then try and knock her out.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, one thing, if you look at Zhang Weili's game, she has made adjustments, but she did not look good when she was on the ground, off her back. There is a lot of work to be done there still. And I think that's what cost her that fight. There were times where it just didn't seem like she really understood how to get up. And Rose, her experience came to play in this fight. You know, going 5 rounds before the way she has so many times. She is just a tough, tough woman. And she's definitely somebody that we need to start talking about when we're talking, when we do our little Mount Rushmores, our goats of female MMA. We need to at least bring her name up, because she's starting to accomplish some very, very good things. And once we're done with this, it's maddening to me that I think Dana still is talking maybe not Carlos Barza. I really don't get that, but whatever.
You don't know how many times he's called the media bozos? He's a bozo if he doesn't think Esparza's next. Who could be next? What's he going to do? Joanna versus Rose? Again, she's down 2-0. got finished in both. Wait, was it a finish in both? I know one was a finish. And then the last two fights, she went 0-2, or Rose did 2-0 against Zhang Weili. Why would we do a third one? Who else is left? I don't get. Maybe Marina Rodriguez. Well, now you're just pissing on your whole division because Carla Sparza has done more than Marina Rodriguez, and she's a former champion, and she's got to win over Rose. I'm sure Rose wants to get that one back. We just finished talking about how important it was for GSP to get his back versus Hughes. Technically, he went up 2-1 against them. He won that trilogy against them, but he needed to get that one back, A, to get his title. Well, same would go. Same would apply to the Sarah fight too. So yeah, Dana's a bozo if he doesn't go with Carla Esparza. He needs to get Carla Esparza. I know he keeps saying it's bad if you don't take the fights we give you, or if you choose to sit out, or
those are just threats. Those are gangster threats.
Exactly. Esparza did not need to be the sub this weekend. She said she worded it correctly. I worked too hard in my comeback to just not have the actual motivation that comes with knowing you're going to fight. That's got to make the world of difference knowing you're going to. You think Vicente Luque would have missed weight if he knew he was in a title fight? I doubt it. He's never shown me to be someone that's guilty of missing weight all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, man. I don't know what they're going to decide, but hopefully it's Esparza versus Namajunas too. And again, Esparza's up 1-0 on that little rivalry. However, I do want to say this. I think as tempting and mouthwatering as it sounds to go, hey, you know what, man? We got to run back the 2020 fight of the year between Zhang Weili and Ioane Andrzejczyk. Don't get me wrong. Don't get it twisted. I want to see that. It's not that I don't want to see it, but here's what happens, guys. Whoever wins is going to say, this was the number one contender fight. I want the winner of Rose versus Esparza. Now, they have an argument, especially Ioana, if Esparza wins. But if Rose retains, again, both gals are 0-2 in title fights versus Rose Namajunas. We can't just turn around and do it again, I don't think, especially in that division that has depth. I just don't think you can. I don't think that would be the right thing to do. So what I propose is, each one of those two, Zhang Weili and Ioane Andrzejczyk, each take on another fight versus someone like a Marina Rodriguez, you know, or a Mackenzie Dern or something like that. And then if they win, then fight for the number one contender fight. By then, maybe Rose is not champ. It's Esparza. Maybe it's someone else. I don't know. But I think if we get away from it a little bit, maybe we can run it back, because they have been some good fights. I'm not trying to take anything away from that. But I just think you have to have a little bit of consistency across the way, you know. And that's the same thing that we're making Valentina have to do, is prove herself in another division before she gets a crack at Nunes. And, you know, look at what we're going to force feed people with Poirier and McGregor soon. You know that fourth one's coming. We don't need to see it. Poirier won two of them. But it's coming at some point, you know. But that one's such buku bucks. You know, it's filled with buku bucks that the UFC is going to shove that one down our throats. I guess at least that one wouldn't be for a title. If Poirier loses to Oliveira, then I guess, yeah, let them do what they got to do. But if Poirier wins a title, come on, man. That ain't fair to Makhachev, Dariush, RDA, I guess even Gaethje. It's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, folks, that was the co-main event at UFC 268. Moving on, Gaethje versus Michael Chandler. This was fight of the night. Duh. They went at it. It was a classic in that regard. It was everything it lived up to be. But I will say, I thought it was also a little bit of a little sloppy on both fighters. Mostly, I guess, on Chandler with his hands down and inviting Gaethje to maybe get some easy punches in, especially when he had already dropped them. I thought the fight was very winnable for Michael Chandler going into round three. It was, let me see, I got the judges' scorecards right here. I think I said it was 1-1 on a couple judges' scorecards. Why don't I have those judges' scorecards? I'll pull them up in a second. But anyway, here they are. All right, here's how it worked out. Chandler won 10-9 on two judges' scorecards, round one. One guy gave it to Gaethje, Crosby. D'Amato and Cleary went with Chandler. Round two, all three judges gave it to Gaethje. So that's what I was saying. On two judges, it was 1-1 going into round three. It turns out Gaethje won round three, and that was that. Now, you know I love me some Michael Chandler. I've always fought for him when he was a Bellator fighter, saying I think he's one of the best lightweights in the world. This fight was winnable in round three. I'm not saying it was a lock. I didn't say that, you know, I didn't feel that way about it. I'm just saying I thought he was throwing the straighter punches, and he kind of still had a little bit of bounce in his legs, even though they had gotten tattooed by Gaethje's shins. Gaethje, when he was getting hurt, had this confused look like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble, whereas Chandler was like, bring it, bring it. He seemed a little bit more indestructible. I'm trying not my best not to homer here. I'm really glad that Chandler put out a video today joking around with his son. He's got this ice pack on his face, and he's kind of playing it up. And he even said to himself, man, I might have made some mistakes, whatever. And I'm glad he's in a good mood. That's probably a difficult loss to take, but I think he's doing his best to take it right. But, yeah, maybe if Chandler just has his hands up, not has them down, and just maybe listen to what Henry Hoof say. Because Henry Hoof told him, he goes, I think you got the skills to win this fight. Follow the game plan. Like, be the clean fighter, the one that we prepared. Put those skills out there, and I think some of those tactics can win you the round, which will win you the fight. He was kind of conveying him a message like that. I think if he followed him, he would have had a pretty good chance of doing it.
He fought exactly the way I thought he was going to fight. And what I was nervous about was him fighting Justin Gaethje's fight. And that's what he did. Now, Henry Hooft is right. That tactically, Michael Chandler was doing some good things. And I think if he would have maintained that, he probably could have won that fight. But he decided to get into a firefight with Justin Gaethje. And with a fighter like that, you can't just give a guy points. You know, he was giving Justin shots in a close fight. He didn't make him earn it. He was literally putting his hands down and telling him, hit me. And you just can't do that, man, especially in a three-round fight. It was a tough fight. I was going to propose this question for spinning back click, but it's probably too late now. So I'll just ask you. Both these guys have been in wars before with other fighters, right? A, where does this fight rank on just your all-time UFC great fight list? Top 10, top 5, top 20, whatever. And is it bigger than the previous wars that these guys have had? So when you look at Michael Chandler, you think Eddie Alvarez, right? Two big fights there. Is Gaethje Chandler better than Chandler and Alvarez? And then when you think Gaethje, you think Palomino. You know, was that fight better than that?
Okay. So I think Michael Chandler's best fight was the first one against Eddie Alvarez. And this would include the clean win that he had over Dan Hooker.
No. I just mean the fight in general. The fight in general.
Well, remember in that fight, Eddie took his back. He fought through that. So he had to dig deep, you know. And he took out a more experienced guy than he was. He hurt him with the hands. He hurt him on the ground as well with some ground and pound. And then ultimately he submitted him. So I thought he had an overall presentation of his skills that netted him the title. So I would give Chandler that one over Alvarez too. Not because he lost, but again, I just think it made the difference. And then also versus, I think Alvarez too, I remember him too easily giving him his back. Even though he swears he defends it well, and I have to support him. He does have this one move where he goes two hands to one, and he can almost spin into your guard or at least be able to get up. But anyway, and then this fight against Gaethje just had some times of recklessness and sloppiness that Chandler's too good for that, you know what I mean, to be involved in those firefights. He always stresses how important it is to fight for his family, and the best thing you can do for your family is win fights and compete for a world title, you know. Slobber knockers is good for the fans, but the wins is the best thing for your career and obviously for your family or whatever. But so that's my favorite Chandler fight. For Gaethje, it would have to be probably the first Palomino fight. And again, not because He lost to Alvarez or Poirier. Those were classics too. The Michael Johnson fight was good. I think Johnson won round one, if I'm not mistaken. And this fight was great, so he won this one too. But that was five rounds of very similar violence to what happened in this past Saturday night. So it would be Gagey Palomino won, Chandler Alvarez won for both guys.
Isn't that weird? So I have the exact same thing, almost for the same reason. I loved this last fight on Saturday. It was great. I mean, there's no way around it. But it was very sloppy at times. So if you're going to if I'm trying to make a fan out of somebody, I would want to show them those fights that you brought up, because there were a lot of technical things that happened in that fight. And there was a finish in both of them too. So that's how I look at it. But this fight for sure will probably end up in the UFC Hall of Fame, I imagine, at some point.
It's got a good chance, for sure. It was built up, and they delivered. And that's all you can ask for. So Justin Gaethje wins. He won across the board, all three judges' scorecards. He had one that was unanimous. And now, of course, next for him, otherwise there's going to be a riot, he wants to fight the winner of Poirier versus Oliveira. And I think he really wants the Poirier fight because he lost to Poirier. So that'd be a chance for him to avenge a loss and also win the world title. So I'm sure he'll be rooting for Poirier to probably win it. That's my opinion. What he won't be rooting for is for Oliveira and Poirier to be a classic that needs to be run back, because then that delays Justin Gaethje fighting for the title. Mm-hmm. But I think he'll be rooting for Poirier. Maybe he's not. I don't know. But again, that's the chance to rectify that one loss and then also get a belt put around his waist.
But deep down inside, even if it's a classic, you know they're not going to run it back, because you know the UFC has – they just don't want a quiet guy that doesn't speak English as their champion. They won't do it. I don't think they would do it. Well, if he were like a menace
– Zhang Weili doesn't speak English, unless you play the China card on me, that it's the world's biggest country and it's a huge market. That I get. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I guess you're right. That's why I say it's got to be an absolute barn burner. You know, Figueiredo doesn't speak English. Somehow they're running three in a row, which I disagree with too, but I don't know. Question is, Makhachev won 1 week ago. A lot of people felt warm and fuzzy about Makhachev. Gaethje and Chandler had to do something important, and that was win. And then hopefully win over the crowd, kind of like they say in Gladiator, win over the crowd, you know. And did Gaethje do that? Did he now surpass Makhachev again? Regardless of the rankings, does it feel like the UFC would promote Gaethje versus the winner of Oliveira versus Poirier? Or would they go with maybe the Russian killer, Islam Makhachev?
I think they would go with Gaethje. I think there's got to be something about Gaethje that rubs them the wrong way at times, maybe because he's a little outspoken. But I think it would be hard not to do that. You could build that fight way up way more.
I'm hearing Beneil Dariush is going to be the weigh-in, the insurance policy for Dustin Poirier, Charles Oliveira.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, they probably think pretty highly of Dustin Poirier. You saw what Jiří Prochazka being the substitute for Glover Teixeira versus Jan Blachowicz. Plus the little role he's on, that seemed to almost solidify it. You know, you do that solid for them, it almost solidifies your next. Luque still got paid, by the way, if anybody's wondering. But he didn't make weight technically. And I think another reason he didn't make weight was because the other two had already made weight. So that's why he didn't need the additional time and he chose not to make it. Should he have pushed through and proven to the UFC, I could have done it anyway? Maybe. But when you're in that spot, you probably think, well, if they're already in, then I'm good. But remember, I think it was Robert Whittaker who on fight day pulled out of his fight versus Romero. Is he? I can't remember what happened. And so what if Usman and Covington make weight on Friday? Luca goes, well, they made weight, so I won't make weight. And then Covington gets ran over by a taxi in New York. And he can't fight. It's minor injuries, but he can't fight. Now Luca can't fight for a title because he didn't make weight. You see what I'm saying? That was the problem, was if he still would have powered through those extra 2 hours, and maybe made weight, then he could have possibly fought for a title. But he said, well, no, these two already made weight. However, I think you want to dot all your I's and cross your T's and when the UFC is kind of banking on you doing it. So anyway, that's kind of that. No big deal. And but I'm just saying, keep an eye on Dariush as possibly somebody who the UFC is kind of thinking high of for being in that position to possibly be the backup for Oliveira Poirier. Hell, he might even get used. You never know. You never know if one of these two guys gets hurt. Remember, if Oliveira can't go, it may be Poirier versus Dariush for the interim. And if you're the interim, it almost certifies that you got to unify versus the champ. Look at Ciryl Gane. Boy, I'm jumping around from weight class to weight class, but that's what the fucking UFC does to us by confusing us. I just go off precedent.
Yeah, no, it is pretty confusing. By the way, did you see Francis Ngannou kind of walk right past Ciryl? Not even, as if nobody was even in the room. The look on Ciryl's face was pretty funny.
Really? I saw I think it was a social media post, but I haven't clicked it yet, so I plan on watching it. All right. Well, I think we covered everything there is there. Chandler's already engaging Conor McGregor, and I guess it makes sense because
– oop, looks like George might have froze there. We'll get him back there. But, yeah, what I was talking about was Francis Ngannou at Madison Square Garden just kind of walking down a corridor, and one of his guys goes and hugs Ciryl Gane's guy. But Ciryl Gane, he paid no mind to. He just walked right past him and didn't say one word. It was pretty hilarious, man, when you look at their faces. But that's kind of what had happened. What happened?
All I was saying goes that no, I forgot what I was saying. Sorry, yeah, I bugged out for a second there. Oh, Chandler's already engaging Conor McGregor, and in the past, fighters who had just won fought fighters who had just won, and fighters who had just lost their fight fought against fighters who had versus someone else. That's why when I say winners versus winners and losers versus losers, it kind of sounds harsh when you say the loser part. But surprisingly, McGregor gave him props. He said, hey, nice fight, and yeah, I'd love to do this sometime. It's amazing, man. Jekyll and Hyde over there. You know, he has a way of completely demolishing you if he wants, or sometimes just giving you the utmost respect. So that's pretty cool for Chandler to see that. You know, I bet you it feels good for Chandler to just get some respect, man. All those years he didn't get his respect, he's finally getting it. But now he's 1-2 in the UFC. I don't know what's going to happen. He's going to have to take a little bit of a longer road. I suppose fighting McGregor is as big of a platform as you can get, probably a decent payday. So chasing that is probably a good idea. But I just think there's two big fish that need to be fried. McGregor versus Poirier 4. And by the way, that's option B. And then McGregor versus Diaz 3. I think that's option A. So those two before we can get to Chandler. Respectfully, McGregor and Ferguson have been chirping at each other. A lot of people might find that pretty appealing as well. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the Diaz-McGregor fight seems like it must happen. Poirier and McGregor feels like it will happen, but I don't think we feel like it has to happen.
Correct. Let me buzz through some of these other fights on the card. Marlon Vera defeated Frankie Edgar. He delivered one of those front kicks, a la Machida Couture, a la Anderson Silva versus Vitor Belfort. It was pretty much an instant KO or TKO in that the referee stopped the fight. I, however, felt like even though Edgar got kicked and then kind of fell first, he didn't show me like a complete bag of bricks just sprawled out where there was no life in him. To me, it still looked like he maybe could grab a leg, grab a single. And then that's when the other fighter comes in and does some hammer fist. And yeah, maybe there's the ugly ending that's inevitable then, and then we regret that. But I've seen other referees kind of give him a little bit more of a chance. I thought Edgar probably could have got a little bit more of a chance. Again, the fighters that we were with, they were split. A couple of them felt like me. A couple were like, nope, he was done. In the end, I think it falls within that threshold of you can't accuse the referee of it being a bad call. You just kind of live with it, and I think Edgar's going to have to live with it. Dana White said he thought it was a great call. So, and again, I'm not sitting here campaigning in any way for a rematch or nothing like that. Edgar fought well, by the way. on two judges' scorecards, he had won round one. On the for round two, let's see how round two played out. In round two, two judges had given it to Vera, one to Edgar. So round three definitely could have still decided it. But there was no need to. There was a finish. And that was that. So Marlon Vera defeats Frankie Edgar. Now the question will remain, should Frankie Edgar retire? I don't know. That's up to him and his family to decide. But again, he competed, you know, pretty good. Man in his 40s who's done a lot. Against the tough Marlon Vera. Shane Burgos defeated Billy Quarantillo. That was the fight that followed Gaethje and Chandler. And guess what? It was kind of exciting, too. Kind of had that slobber knocker feel as well. Shane Burgos came out ahead on the judges' scorecards, but it was close. Let me give you those quick judges' scorecards, and then we'll get Goza's thoughts on both fights. Although my screen's a little frozen. So maybe I won't mess with it. Maybe I'll come back to it. But what were your thoughts on those two fights, Goz?
I don't know what to do with Frankie Edgar because I think what makes it so difficult is he showed glimpses of how he used to be. You know, he was fighting a pretty decent fight, but then something happens and it catches him, and you just don't want to see a guy that not only meant so much to the sport and accomplished so much to the sport, but he's a good person. He's just a really good person. You know, he's never an asshole. He's always a good guy. He gives you great answers, great interviews. Makes you feel like you're the most important person in the room when he's talking to you. You don't want to see him end up the way of some of these prize fighters that we see later on in their careers. And he's now suffered some pretty bad knockouts. And let's not forget, even fights that he's won, he's probably taken some pretty bad concussions in those. I just don't know what to do with him anymore because he still has what it takes to be a good fighter, but I don't think he has what it takes to be great. And to me, he's already been great. You know, I don't see a reason why to keep this going. Marlon Vera is a good fighter. You know, I don't want to make it sound like some cupcake came in and disposed of Frankie Edgar. Marlon Vera is a really good fighter, and he fought a good fight. But that was one hell of a shot that he took. I agree. Maybe you could have let it go a little bit more. It was one of those where I was like, I'm okay with the way it happened. But I can understand why people may have felt that it could have gone a little bit more. When he got up, though, you could tell his bell was pretty rung. But he's survived that before in other fights, too.
Fucking A. Yeah, he sure did against Gray Maynard. But he was also probably, geez, at least a decade younger, maybe 12 years younger. I don't know. Again, you know, it's just it's just that threshold, you know, and I don't know. I'm sure we'll talk about this before, but I guess one comparison I've always said is this. You know how you and I could both be cops on a highway and your threshold might be the law is the law. It says 65 and you were going 70, pal. Get out the driver's license. I'm going to write you a ticket. You might be by the book goes. By the book, Brian. And I might see 75 or 80 and say, well, he's kind of keeping up with traffic. He seems to be pretty safe. And so my threshold is I let you go a little bit more, you know, and I might even give you a warning. Hell, I might not pull you over or I might not give you a warning. But then there's the guy that goes 100. And as soon as they both go by, both of our sirens, boop, you know what I mean? And we're chasing them down and there's no talking out of it. Even if they hand us donuts or it's a hot blonde and she shoves her tits in her face, it don't matter. The ticket's going down. You know what I mean? There's just no. That's the threshold that you are speeding. You know, there's no way around it. I don't care what you say. I don't care if you're the president's son. I'm giving you a ticket. That's what we mean, you know, with these referees. Some of them just choose to do this or that. And when they stop it, it's we pay them to be in there because they're trained to be in there. And that's that. You live with it. Quarantillo and Burgos, I want to get your thoughts on it, but I was able to retrieve the scores. It was 1-1 goes on all the judges' scorecards. They were all consistent. Round one went to Billy Quarantillo. Round two went to Shane Burgos. Round three went to Shane Burgos. So it was 1-1 going into round three. It was a great fight, and that's how we felt as well, that the winner of round three would win the fight. What did you think of that one?
I thought it was a really good fight. It sucks because, you know, it came off the heels of a really great fight. So I think no matter how heated or how good it got, the crowd just kind of went from a high to a little bit of a low, and just trying to get back your senses. Quarantillo did great things in that fight, and he damaged Burgos. You know, if you look at the face, you would think, okay, Burgos is losing this fight. But Burgos just seemed to hurt Billy Quarantillo on other occasions, and I don't think that Billy was able to kind of regain focus in that. I think his body was starting to fail him, and he got tired. He was tired. He was probably pretty concussed. And so it came down to that last round, and Burgos was the one that just had more gas in the tank. So it's weird because Burgos wins the fight, and I think he even said it, like he wasn't too happy with his performance. And Billy Q seemed a little heartbroken because he seems like he put a lot into this fight, and he probably could have beat a lot of people that night, just not Burgos.
I would agree. Yeah. I think both of their stock went up because they were on a high-profile card, but they both competed, and they took it to the third round before it was decided. So both guys should hang their head up high. But, yeah, the winner, obviously, it's, you know, going home with two checks is definitely better than going home with one. And then you put yourself in a position where your next fight's going to be even bigger. When you lose, you know, you got to maybe take a little bit of a step back. All right, let's talk about Bellator 270. Let's get to that title fight, and then we'll start cleaning up a little bit on both cards. I definitely don't want to miss out on talking about Pitbull versus Queely. So, Patrici Pitbull Frady fought Peter Queely in Dublin, Ireland, in the main event of Bellator 270. And the reason this was for the vacant title is because Patricio Pitbull Frady, he gave up the title. So he vacated it. So he's not a champion at all because he lost his featherweight title the month before against AJ McKee. When he was in that Grand Prix, competing in the Grand Prix, he was also putting up the featherweight title along the way. So Pitbull, the younger Pitbull, the smaller Pitbull, and that's Patricio, he's no longer a champion, but now his brother is. Congratulations to Patricio Pitbull Frady. He defeated Peter Queely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when you think about those brothers and what they've accomplished in the sport, it's pretty legit, man. Unfortunately, things didn't go well for the entire camp, but to win a belt and come home to the gym like that is something good for their team. It's good for morale. And really, when you look at what they've accomplished over there at Bellator, it's pretty damn amazing. And what more can you say? I mean, they do their talking outside of the cage, but they do their talking inside the cage as well.
How would you rank those brothers compared to other siblings that have competed in mixed martial arts?
I was thinking about this a little bit, and they've done pretty good, pretty well. The Nogueras are another one that kind of stands out. The Emelianenkos, when you think about them, I mean, Fedor kind of carried the torch there. The Diaz brothers made their mark. I think they're kind of like similar, but I don't know that they just didn't accomplish gold the way the Pitbull brothers have. The Pitbull brothers have a lot of gold, but I don't know that they've captivated audiences like some of these other brothers in the sport. So they're high up there. If you look at families, you know, then you can kind of lump the Gracies a little bit together and what they've been able to accomplish in certain time periods.
Yeah, if you go off titles, which seems to be the argument in most sports, you know, when you go Jordan and Kobe, well, Jordan had 6, Kobe had 5, LeBron's got 4. They're all great. Brady and Montana, well, they both have 4. Oh, wait, now Brady has 5. Oh, wait, now Brady has 6. Oh, wait, now he has 7. You know, a lot of people just talk about rings and titles, Messi, Ballon d'Ors, or major titles, you know, versus Ronaldo, versus Pelé, versus Maradona, whatever. That's the big talk for a lot of people, fans, journalists, other players in other sports. The Frady brothers have that. They've won tournaments, and they've won titles. This one was a position where Frady, you know, he just lost to Queely, you know, by that doctor stoppage or whatever, but he was coming in off a loss. And but he really, this fight could have been made 2 months ago, and it wouldn't have been for a title until the younger Pitbull vacated his title. you know, and allowed the bigger brother to fight. So it was a unique twist. So that's one argument, I suppose, that the Nogueiras, for example, could say, like, well, there wasn't really this gifting of an opportunity or anything like that. But still, he got to the title fight and he won it. So if it's all about gold and tournament wins, Frady brothers have some of that. Nogueiras, only one of them had that. One of them had the Pride heavyweight title. Same guy won the UFC in heavyweight interim title. The other Nog won his fair share of fights. He just didn't win those major titles.
Mm-hmm.
Diaz brothers won at WEC. One of them won at Strikeforce. Nick also won at, I think, Elite XC. So they have some belts. Again, Nate has a WEC belt. And they have a ton of big, big, you know, selling fights. They might have a good argument against the Pibble brothers. And then, like Ghost said, the fame, the impact on the sport. I mean, the Diaz brothers have been tremendous. So were the Nogueiras, but I think the Diaz brothers may be difficult to beat. The Emelianenkos, most of it rides on Fedor.
Mm-hmm.
And him.
The Hua brothers, too.
The other one didn't suck. Alexander definitely won more than he lost, but Fedor was something else. Yes, the Hua brothers. I think Murillo won an Elite XC title. Shogun won a Pride middleweight Grand Prix, and he won UFC light heavyweight title. So the Hua brothers have to be thrown in there. The Overeem brothers was carried mostly by Alistair Overeem.
If you look at combat sports in general and just an impact on the sport, eventually you might be talking about, which is weird because we've been talking about brothers, but here we're going to be talking about a father-son duo, the McKees. Mm-hmm. If you look at everything Antonio McKee has done for the sport, the people that he's helped win, and what he's done in wrestling, and then you add in what AJ McKee has done and will continue to do for the sport, one day you're going to look back at families and you're going to go, wow, those two kind of did a lot of shit for the sport too.
Yeah, correct. Well, let me just buzz through these other fights. Goes Patchy Mix, who came in a little bit heavy. He defeated James Gallagher in a pivotal fight at 135 pounds. Mix is in the top. He's in the mix. He's in the mix at 135 pounds, but they already kind of have their next title fight already lined up. So it's going to be Sergio Pettis. Oh, we got to throw the Pettis brothers as well. They both have won titles now. Sergio Pettis defends against Kyoji Horiguchi. And then Rafian Stotts is looking for a fight. And it sounds to me like Patrick Mix might be interested in that. And I think that might make sense. But Mix definitely has to address that missing of the weight, because it's going to be tough for someone to rally behind you if you keep winning fights but not making weight. You know, you got to make weight. Pedro Carvalho defeated Daniel Weichel. This was a battle of long time featherweights that have been successful over at Bellator. And then, of course, we had a bunch of other fights there that you can check out in the results page at MMA Junkie if you want to, you know, check out all the results for the fight card. But I want to move on to UFC 268 and kind of clean up the bottom. We talked about the main card already. Let's talk about some of these fights on the undercard. So Bobby Green defeated Al Iaquinta. Al Iaquinta hadn't fought in 2 years, and he kind of looked a little rusty, you know. I don't want to take anything away from Bobby Green. I always like to praise more the winner rather than make excuses for the loser. I was happy to see Iaquinta back in there, but Bobby Green just looked pretty solid, you know. He deserved to definitely win, and he won in round one. It was pretty easy for him. Alex Pereira defeated Andreas Michailidis. What makes Alex Pereira so notable is he's the guy that gave the last KO loss to Israel Adesanya, but in the kickboxing world. Of course, Israel Adesanya was undefeated in the UFC up until his recent loss versus Jan Blachowicz, but that's his only loss in MMA, I should say, instead of UFC. But Alex Pereira gave him a loss in kickboxing. And after that vicious flying knee, I think we all see why. I mean, homeboy looks very, very tough on the feet, on the ground. Still has some work to be done. He lost round one, but in round two, he blasted Michailidis. Any thoughts on those two?
Yeah. You know, one fight that we were talking about the whole trip, as George mentioned, we'll probably get into this on another episode, our military trip, but the one fight that we didn't want to miss was Bobby Green and Ally Aquinta. And I agree with you. He did look a little rusty, but Bobby Green just looked really good. Yeah. I hope that guy gets compensated well, because I think that does translate to the fans. I think people like to watch him fight. I think fighters know he's tough, but I really hope that the organization realizes that and pays him what he's worth, because he is very fun to watch.
No doubt. I would agree with that. Chris Curtis defeated Phil Haas. But Chris Curtis, man, if you know what he's been through, you couldn't have been happier for anyone else on this card than Chris Curtis. He defeated Phil Haas with a first-round stoppage. And Nasruddin Imavov defeated Edmund Shahbazyan in round two. This was different. This was from that crucifix. Some vicious elbows, man. It looked like he was just fucking maybe breaking orbital bones, cheekbones. Edmund Shahbazyan, of course, was highly touted as the next possible big thing in the middleweight division, but things have not gone his way. So congrats to Nasruddin Imavov and Chris Curtis. Any thoughts on those two fights, Goz?
Yeah, the Chris Curtis fight was just, like George said, the history of what this kid's been through. Him on multiple times wanting to just end his career because he just couldn't seem to get that break to get to the UFC. And since then, roll off a little bit of a streak, get his opportunity to almost get in and then not get in. But then given this shot, and you know, he was the underdog in this fight. And he fought a good fight. And we recently spoke to him. We caught him off guard about a week ago. And I'm just happy that no matter what happens in the rest of his career going forward, he can always look back at this moment and just say, not only did I fight in the UFC one time, I won my fight. And that's just, there are people that live their entire lives hoping they could accomplish something like that. And he did it.
He made the UFC. He got the fight late notice. He fought at middleweight when he's really a welterweight. And he fought against a very decent middleweight, not just like a tomato can or anything like that. And he got the finish. So, yeah, he ticked a lot of boxes, but he's got to be happy, man. Think about how many times he wanted to retire. Or he did retire, but then contemplated it again when he was unretired. And then he finally just gave himself one more chance, believed in himself, talked about how, you know, a couple of the coaches, including Nate Pettit over at Extreme, just drilled wrestling into him over and over and over, because we know he can strike, but he just couldn't wrestle. And now at least he had that confidence that if he did wrestle, he was going to be able to, you know, be more competitive, whether that meant stopping a takedown, getting up from a takedown, or even recognizing the takedown before it begins using footwork or whatever, or maybe even initiating one of his own. You could just tell he was more confident. And the reaction by his coaching team and the reaction by Eric Nixick, who was with us at the military base, you could just tell, man, a lot of people were happy for Chris Curtis. And throw us in the mix, too.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the rest of the undercard. Ian Garry defeated Jordan Williams. Chris Barnett, who is slowly becoming everybody's favorite heavyweight, he defeated Jean Valente. That's right. Jean Valente is now fighting a heavyweight. Big kid. I don't know if you saw the weigh-ins. I was like, who's that big dude? Turned out to be Jean Valente. That might be his last fight. I think I heard him say he's retiring no matter what. So he said, chale, let me just not have to cut the 205. Let me get that last paycheck. But he's not going to get two. He's only getting one. Dustin Jacoby defeated John Allen. Melsik Bagdasarian defeated Bruno Souza. Bagdasarian, I think is how you say it. And Ode Osborne defeated CJ Vergara. That was all 14 fights. And don't forget, Sean Strickland and Luke Rockhold was supposed to be on this card. That would have taken us to 15. And I think Jermaine Durandamy versus Irene Aldana may have was going to be on this card as well at one point. But they gave away six bonuses, goes $50K to Marlon Vera for that front kick. How do you not give him one? I agree. Gaethje versus Chandler, we said duh earlier. Yeah, that's the fight of the night. And then how do you not give Pereira that flying knee? That was beautiful. Bobby Green, he scores 50 as well. And the last one went to Chris Barnett. So Dana White gave away six bonuses of 50,000 each. And I heard he was maybe even going to tighten up a few other fellows or gals because he was just pleased with the fight card. They had a great gate. I think it was almost 10 million. Probably sold out MSG. And I guess they killed it on socials. All right. There you have it. That's our recap of UFC 268 and Bellator 270. There was a few things that happened here and there scattered, but maybe we'll just talk about that on Thursday because we've already gone over the hour limit. But at least we had some fun unpacking the big fights from this weekend, including Kamaru Usman, that historic fifth title defense, Rose Namajunas becoming one of the greats in women's MMA, solidifying her spot. And, of course, Gaethje and Chandler, we talked about it for years, back when they were in different organizations, and then they finally fought. So that was great that we got to see it. Big shout-out to Fort Eustis, who had us there for a few days, including their fight party, the UFC 268 fight party. We got to watch the fight with all the troops. And I think we're going to probably do I'm going to ask the boss to see if we can do a little special on just that alone, because I think that's worthy of its own show without just shoving it and force-feeding it into this recap show, because our job is to cover mixed martial arts. But we want to give him a special shout-out because we had a blast out there. We had a blast. It's the greatest fight party on earth. I would love to take each and every one of you to one of those because it's, you know, if you see the videos and the pics, you kind of know how special it is to us. But to be there and feel it, it's something else, man. It's crazy. So thank you to Nina and Donna from Fort Eustis for pulling all this together. Colonel Thigpen and many others, we appreciate you from the bottom of our hearts. And we'll talk more about that later in the week. So we're going to get on out of here. Lots of more content to produce, other video franchises, interviews to be done, and some rankings. Got to sort through those. All right, folks, we are out of here. We'll see you all on Wednesday night or Thursday morning for our next episode of MMA Junkie Radio. Take it easy, go out there, and be a champion.